Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on Between the Covers, Bethany Grabo talks with William Ritter about his new book, The Dire King, and hear the author's thoughts on the supernatural, the many forms of bravery, and the diversity in young adult fiction. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the North Portland Library ladies have family-friendly programs, plus some good curl-up and read ideas. And this great programming is because of members like you and your generosity. If you have not become a member, please go to kboo.fm and click donate. It's 8:59, KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall. Dead Moon Night is a celebration of the Portland band Dead Moon. An official proclamation declaring that day as Dead Moon Night will be read along with surprise musical guests, refreshments, and an exhibit about Dead Moon. Again, that's Dead Moon Night, Thursday, October 5th at 6 p.m. at the outdoor portico of Portland City Hall, 1221 Southwest 4th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, in a few minutes, I hope to talk to Shireen Al-Adeimi, a doctoral candidate and instructor at Harvard University who wrote a piece, Only Americans Can Stop America's War on Yemen. And first, I want to get to some headlines, starting with Yemen. The World Health Organization has recorded at least 2,134 cholera-related deaths in Yemen since April. In a statement on Tuesday, the WHO said 777,000 suspected cases of cholera have been registered in the country over the past months. The UN agency said the northwestern Hajjah province has recorded the highest death toll, almost 400 fatalities, while Socotra province, a small four-island archipelago, was the only part of the country that remained unaffected by the epidemic. Yemen has been dogged by violence since 2014 when Houthi rebels overran much of the country. The conflict escalated in 2015 when Saudi Arabia, supported by the United States, launched an air campaign aimed at rolling back Houthi gains. Tropical Storm Nate is passing over Nicaragua now and may form a hurricane later this week. Forecasters are warning that the U.S. Gulf Coast, including Louisiana, needs to monitor the storm. Paul Street, writing for Counterpunch, titles his article The NRA's Latest Terrorist Attack on U.S. Soil, noting that the Las Vegas killer advanced the NRA's political goals whether or not he was a member. Street writes, quote, "It's all statistically foreordained, as the NRA is certainly aware. You cannot have untold thousands of demented psychopaths and millions of high-kill automatic weapons simultaneously circulating in a violence-worshipping, highly militarized, and brutal video game society like the United States without grisly mass gun massacres occurring every few years or so. Truth be told, it's surprising that such spectacular mass shootings aren't more common, and of course the smaller mass shootings are now an almost daily occurrence, as The Guardian tells us. And so the latest, then, on the white NRA terrorist is that he planned an escape, and the police are speculating that he may have had an accomplice. The BBC says Spain's constitutional court has suspended next Monday's session of the Catalan Parliament in a bid to preempt a possible push for independence. The court said such a move would be a breach of the constitution. The earlier Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy warned Catalonia's regional government against declaring independence after a disputed vote last Sunday. Catalan leader Carles Puigdemont had indicated that he could make such a declaration at next week's session. The court's ruling on Thursday upheld a challenge by Catalonia's Socialist Party, which opposes secession from Spain and not from the government in Madrid. Allowing the regional parliament to meet and declare independence, the court said, would violate the rights of the party's MPs. From the Independent, Mexico has itself offered aid, even after its earthquakes, aid to Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria's destructive passage through the Caribbean. The U.S. southern neighbor plans to ship experts from its state-run power company to the island, where large numbers of people are without electricity, along with 30 tons of water and mosquito repellent. The offer came on Wednesday, a day after President Donald Trump visited Puerto Rico. He told islanders they could be very proud that more people had not perished in the storm compared to the toll from a real catastrophe like Hurricane Katrina in 2005. Mexico's offer comes in the context of strained relations with the U.S. in the months since Mr. Trump took office. The president has promised to build a wall along the U.S. southern border to keep out illegal immigrants and drugs, and repeatedly claimed Mexico will pay for it. Mexico had planned to send material assistance to the U.S. after Hurricane Harvey, which hit Texas in late August, but later withdrew that offer after the first of the two earthquakes struck in the country's south in early September. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. And now I'm joined by Shireen Al-Adaimi, an instructor at Harvard University, a doctoral candidate who wrote a piece on commondreams.org, Only Americans Can Stop America's War on Yemen. And I very much want to talk about that. Are you there, Shireen?
Yes, I'm here.
I'm so glad that you could join me.
Thank you.
Well, you write that the UN was forced to remove Saudi Arabia recently from a list of child killers. Could you explain that?
Right. So this was last year, and the UN had placed Saudi Arabia on the list of child killers because of their indiscriminate attacks on civilians in Yemen. And within 72 hours, they dropped their name, and they admitted that it was because of financial threats that Saudi Arabia had made. So after I wrote this article, the UN has now placed the Saudi Arabia back on the list, but it really remains to be seen what that even means and how long they'll stay on there, frankly.
I read that the threat was very potent because Saudi Arabia funds so much of what the UN is doing, including Palestinian relief. And Ban Ki-moon said that, essentially, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, he said that he felt humiliated very pained at having to make the decision to cover that up. But I wanted
He had to make a choice between, you know, funding programs in Gaza and other places and, you know, potentially saving children in Yemen. So
I wanted to bring that up first because I wanted to set the stage for the U.S. ally and a business partner, and very much a partner in what's going on in Yemen. Could you talk about the U.S. war effort more generally in Yemen, including the mid-air refueling and the satellite targeting for the Saudis?
Right. So the U.S. has been involved right from the beginning of the war, and they've provided intelligence support to the Saudis. They've been in the command room. They have been providing mid-air refueling to Saudi jets as they're bombing, you know, and they've been bombing, like I said, indiscriminately. And so this is all besides, of course, the weapons sales that we hear about in the news, but we don't often hear about all the other ways that the U.S. is involved in the Saudi war in Yemen.
The war comes, of course, it's started under the Obama administration, and there were other coalition partners, I understand, including Egypt and even Qatar, which has now been kicked out because of a dispute with the Saudis.
And the United Arab Emirates has been a huge partner with the Saudis.
A huge partner. What is the extent of their involvement? Is it just air support?
No, so much more than air support. The UAE has been accused of running underground, you know, prisons in Yemen, in South Yemen. Some people see them as occupiers. They're acting as occupiers. They're trying to work against terrorist groups there, but they've been accused of torture, and there are some really horrific stories coming out of Yemen in relation to the involvement of the UAE there. This is besides, of course, the air support.
Well, of course, the result has been this terrific humanitarian catastrophe, and part of it, those 777,000 suspected cases of cholera. Could you talk about cholera and how it's affecting people? Could you talk about Médecins Sans Frontières working in Yemen?
Yeah, so this has just been in the last 5 months. Cholera has spread to an unprecedented number. This is worse than the Haiti crisis, which was already huge, of course. 750,000 cases and counting. They're expecting that by the end of the year, it'll be 1 million cases. And the sad thing is that the cure for cholera is just dehydration with clean water. And people just don't have access to clean water. They don't have access to water. And so far, there have been over 2,000 deaths. And it just doesn't seem like there's any end in sight.
And to be more specific, they don't have access to clean water because the water systems and the sewer systems have been bombed to pieces. Is that correct?
Right. So they've targeted water sources, and of course, you know, people are just in desperate situations because Yemen used to import 90% of our food, and so now with the blockade, a lot of food is not coming in, medicines are not coming in, and people, of course, are trapped in Yemen, so they can't leave for treatment or any other reason. So it's exacerbated this conflict greatly, the blockade has.
Can you talk about the work that Doctors Without Borders is doing there?
Doctors Without Borders has been involved in several areas in Yemen. I was involved in some fundraising for them back last October because of the incredible work that they've been doing. Of course, their hospitals have been bombed several times, and they've had to scale back operations in some areas. They still support the hospitals that are running, even if they're not physically there. And they provide, anything from cholera relief to, you know, treating victims of airstrikes to treating people who are malnourished. And so their work has been wide-reaching in Yemen.
I have been trying to get up to speed on the situation and found that, of course, it was far too complex for me to really get up to speed in a short time.
Yes.
But there's so much going on. Apparently the, do you say Houthis? Is that how you say it?
Houthis,
thank you. Yeah. Houthis, I think, have also been getting in the way of aid shipment. I found a news article saying that vaccines had been turned away, and it said by the government, but it wasn't clear to me whether it was by the...
So when they say it was turned away by the government, they mean the quote-unquote legitimate government of Yemen, which is Hadi's government in Yemen, which the Saudi Arabians have been trying to restore along with the United States. So that's the government that they're referring to, and they're the ones who apparently turned down this the vaccination shipments that was coming in. And there were several reasons given. Part of it, you know, was that there weren't enough vaccines and people might fight over who gets vaccines and who doesn't. I don't know what the internal politics were about that, but it was a huge disappointment that a shipment that could have been life-saving to at least some people was turned away.
I've also been trying to determine what the power dynamics are in the region. Part of it apparently is the former president, I believe his name was Saleh, pretty much had a kleptocracy and was a billionaire. And now he seems to be more or less... Is this still true, and he is backing the Houthis?
Yeah, so this is the interesting twist in the situation in Yemen. Ali Abdullah Saleh, the former president, had fought the Houthis in several wars over the years, and they were bitter enemies, but they made this alliance of convenience, it seems like, against Saudi Arabia. And so it's an alliance of convenience. They're fighting this war together. So when you read that Saudi Arabia is fighting the Houthis, Saudi Arabia is really fighting Houthis and Ali Abdullah Saleh and the part of the military that he controls, and he remains to have huge influence in Yemen. So they're really fighting most Yemenis. They're not just fighting the small Houthi group.
He would have the kind of resources for arms buys, I guess.
Yes.
Watching what little video comes out of the region, I saw a crew-served weapon being fired from the back of a pickup truck, and the thing that struck me about it, it was a common enough sort of, you know, shoot for the camera thing, but the thing that struck me about it is that the operator had no shoes. I thought, well, he could steal one of those bullets and get some sandals, but such a grim...
And we've seen a lot of photos like that of people with just no food, no shoes, and, you know, and just tattered clothing, and they're just fighting with whatever resources that, you know, Saleh had a stockpile of weapons, and so they're using those weapons to fight back. But, of course, they don't have any air capacities, and they're not able to shoot down any of the airplanes that are striking civilians or anything like that. So they're fighting, most of their fighting is on the ground.
I saw that an old Soviet missile had been repurposed to shoot back at Saudi Arabia, and it was an astonishing thing on a couple of levels. First, that such a thing would still be there. Second, that they were actually able to make the thing operable and convert it into a surface-to-surface bomb. And then, of course, you know, the context, of course, is just plain horrible. But it gave me some idea. There must be a great deal of Soviet-era weaponry in the region.
Right.
And to be more specific about that weapon, it was a combination solid fuel and liquid fuel rocket. It'd be very, very complicated for anyone to fire that thing, and I don't know how they managed to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, and so I wanted to, the reason I wanted to have you on is just to break the silence that you write about in your article. You start your article saying, "Yemen continues to suffer in silence." But you say that there is a resolution, unfortunately, nothing stronger than that, I guess, but a House concurrent resolution 81. Could you talk about that?
Yeah, so this is a unique opportunity. This is a bipartisan effort, and they've introduced this bill, which is called the Privileged Resolution, which will force a vote on the war in Yemen, because they're saying that this war has not been authorized and the U.S. has been heavily involved, and so it deserves at least some discussion and a vote in Congress. And so this is happening soon. And, you know, it's encouraging. It's encouraging that there's a bipartisan effort to stop the war, stop the U.S.'s involvement in the war in Yemen, which, in my view and in many people's view, will very quickly stop the war in Yemen, because they're not receiving the kind of backing that they're receiving from the U.S. and the Saudi Arabia. They won't keep going much further with this war.
I wonder if Oregon's representatives even know about the resolution. Yeah. So it's House Resolution, Concurrent Resolution 81. And you said it's privileged, so they do have to vote on it. That's a good thing, I suppose. But as you say, pardon me, Yemen definitely, I mean, given the fact that it is a humanitarian disaster and the fact that it is such a coordinated war effort, I think it has been very effectively hidden. It's not a mistake. The powers that be that want to conduct this war don't want the American people to have anything to do with it, don't want democracy, such as it is in this country, to interfere.
No, because if you just look at one picture coming out of the U.S., the war in Yemen, you'll know that we're on the wrong side of this war, and there's no justifiable reason to cause the kind of, you know, damage and catastrophe that we've caused over there. There's just no way to justify it. And so you can't have people really understand what's happening and what our role is there, because it's just been shameful. It's presented as a civil war, which it isn't. It's presented as a, that they're saying that Iran is in Yemen. Iran has not been involved in Yemen. It's been highly exaggerated. But it's really just a shameful stance that we've taken on this war.
I also seem to recall, pardon me just a moment while I shuffle my notes. Regarding the war, President Rump exulted on his return from Saudi Arabia and was very happy to have sold billions in war materiel. And so that is an aspect of what is going on. It does, the Iranian connection does seem to be repeated whenever the war in Yemen is brought up. It's framed as a fight between Iran and Saudi Arabia. But as you say, there isn't anything really to back that up. I mean, if you look at the that's the reason I asked about Saleh, because I really wanted to try to figure out who has the money in the situation besides the Saudis. And I suppose that there's no comparison really from one side to the other. The bombing is so extensive. The cholera is so incredible. I think that even a little bit of news coverage would change or develop an American opinion, at least, about the war. About cholera, I do want to draw you out on that. You mentioned in your article in Common Dreams that children are probably wasting away in the time that it takes to read your brief article. Cholera was considered a 19th century disease until recently. The neoliberal increased extraction of wealth from the lesser militarized countries. Cholera can kill children very quickly, as you know, because it dehydrates them so rapidly. And the videos coming out from Yemen are just heartbreaking. Also, it's also coming in the context of just plain starvation. I remember seeing a photograph of a child being carried by his mother into the hospital to be treated for cholera, and I thought the poor thing is likely to die from starvation before it can even be treated for cholera. Yeah. And he or she had bones appearing. I could see the spine, the scapula, and even the top of the pelvis. When a small body is that low on fuel, surely it only takes a few hours, because cholera causes the body to forcibly expel water through diarrhea and through vomiting. A true horror, and to think that 777,000 people have it. A State Department cable obtained by WikiLeaks and mentioned by a Russian source, Sputnik News, says that there are considerable unexploited oil and gas reserves in Yemen, and this is also not framed as part of the probable cause for the fight, because I know that the Saudis have rather overexploited their oil fields. They are building new rigs at a tremendous rate, and although Yemen doesn't produce much oil by comparison, it does have gigantic reserves. Have you encountered any information about that?
Very little information about that, and it's definitely a possible motivation for Saudi's involvement in Yemen. But I think the main reason here is that Saudi has always counted on a Yemeni government that, you know, serves Saudi interests, and Ali Abdullah Saleh has certainly shown to serve Saudi interests when he needed to. But with the takeover of the Houthis, that was a signal that was no longer going to be the case. They weren't going to have a government in Yemen that serves their interests, and so they quickly lost control over Yemen. And I think they thought that this was going to be a quick in and out kind of situation. You know, the crown prince, now he's the crown prince. He wanted to prove himself and his abilities. He came out of nowhere, and this was his one big project. But I think it's clear that this is, they've, you know, greatly underestimated the resilience of the Yemenis and the alliances that were formed to fight them off. And so here they are 2.5 years later, and their motivation seems to be, you know, their own interests, of course, but they're framing it as something else. And they've been very unsuccessful in Yemen so far.
Of course, it's very clear also, could not be more clear, from Trump's visit and his exaltation that another driver at least for the American side of the war, which is huge, is the sale of arms. And so it's incredible to think that there is this massive war going on. When I was a kid, when the Vietnam War was raging, and I would watch the reports on the television, and they galvanized the American public because of their details, in part. I mean, you can get videotaped directly from the fighting, and whereas this war has been even better hidden than the subsequent American wars. I mean, I noticed that even since the invasion of Panama in '89, the American press has been steadily withdrawn from its capacity and its duties of reporting the war, and now the war is just practically and effectively hidden, and it's astonishing to think that this terrific and violent effort is going on, and we just don't know it. I found some details and statistics. feel free to interrupt me for comment, but the Saudi-led coalition includes the United Arab Emirates, yeah. Bahrain, Jordan, Senegal, Kuwait, Morocco, Egypt, Sudan, and as I was saying previously, Qatar.
Yeah.
Other countries like Djibouti, Eritrea, and Somalia have made their bases and airspace available to the coalition, while countries like France, the U.S., and U.K. have provided intelligence and logistical support. And as you said, that logistical support even extends to the very essential act of refueling those U.S. aircraft. It's handy, the nozzle on the KC-131 tanker fits those aircraft, and so they can refuel them in the air, and that was the whole idea.
Mm-hmm.
Essential to the war effort and going on every second. More statistics, one child under five dies every 10 minutes from starvation and cholera. One person per hour is dying of cholera in Yemen. Fewer than 45% of hospitals are functioning. Most have been bombed and people don't have access to food or clean water due to the blockade. Another thing that is completely hidden, 10,000 civilians have been killed from the fighting alone, underestimated probably from the UN.
Yes.
And 3 million people are internally displaced. Another horror, meaning they're just basically homeless and have no place to go.
Right. And they've even bombed, you know, internally displaced people in camps. They've bombed hospitals. They've bombed funeral homes. They've bombed homes. Nobody is safe in Yemen. Every time there's an airstrike there, all of us here in the U.S. who have connections back home, we're always checking our phones, trying to make phone calls, trying to see if our families made it okay. And it's just been this. The U.S. is just so heavily involved, and for the media not to be, you know, reporting on the involvement of the U.S., this isn't just some foreign war happening to some foreign country. This is us fueling this war in a major way. And, you know, until this resolution in the House, you know, there hasn't been any discussion. So this is finally an opportunity for the U.S. to right this wrong, if that's even possible, at least to stop involvement in this incredible catastrophe.
You are involved in trying to help. You have a personal campaign with Doctors Without Borders. You also suggest donating to Oxfam charity, which has not done that much in the U.S. That's more of a British thing.
Yes.
UNICEF. I remember having little UNICEF boxes trick-or-treating in the 60s. Mm-hmm. SaveTheChildren.org in U.K. and Disasters Emergency Committee. Would you like to say anything further as we wrap up the half-hour segment?
I just hope that people would also call their representatives in Congress this week and urge them to vote yes on HCON Resolution 81. This is our one chance to end the war in Yemen, and I truly believe that if the American public is informed and if they're outraged by this knowledge, then this war in Yemen will stop.
Well, and I'm going to put on my commentator hat and say it's time to stop this sneaky-ass Vietnam in Yemen. This is morally insupportable. It's more than an embarrassment. It's a moral horror that the American people are not acting on this. We cannot take as an excuse that we have not been informed. We have to inform ourselves. We have to push the press to actually cover this. And Shireen Al-Adeimi, I thank you very much for taking time from your duties and teaching there at Harvard and speaking with us here on KBOO Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for calling in.
Hi.
Well, you've been listening to Press Watch. This is October 5th, and so at 9:30, Per Fagering will be here. He'll be covering the Rohingya, Catalonia, Russia, and Puerto Rico stories, plus a solution for North Korea. So that's coming up in just 2 minutes. At 10 o'clock, it's Air Cascadia with Chris Andre, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. That's like Dennis Bernstein. At 11, Between the Covers, Bethany Grabow talks with William Ritter about his new book, The Dire King, and gets the author's thoughts on the supernatural, the many forms of bravery, and the diversity in young adult fiction. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, the North Portland Library ladies have family-friendly programs plus some good curl-up-and-read ideas. You've been listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. Stay tuned in just a few minutes. Per Fagering, Fight the Empire.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name is Per Fogring, and we have kind of a combo plate this morning. I'd like to start off with saying a little bit about the Rohingya in Burma, or Myanmar, as it is often called. It's been in the news a lot lately, sort of been pushed aside by more recent developments, but the Rohingya are people from, they are Muslims, and they live in the Rakhine state of Myanmar, and they've been in kind of battle with the Burmese.